This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. This is your host, Tim Link, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. Got a super duper exciting show. I'm interested to talk to this author about all his wonderful novels and series that he has. We're going to be chatting with Jeffrey B. Burton. Of course, he's got the critically acclaimed series, Mace Reed Canine Series, and we know he's a big dog lover, which we are here too, of course. So we're going to talk to him about his latest book, which is The Dead Years, Let Sleeping Serial Killers Lie. So this will be exciting. I'm interested to find out about the whole background of the book and how the puppy dogs obviously come into play and the twists and turns without giving it all away. And then we'll obviously talk to Jeffrey a little bit about his writing and his writing styles, see if he is one of those authors that gets up at 5:30 every morning and cracks away, or if he's like me, waits till the deadline and then gets it all done. So we'll come back right after this commercial break and have a chat with Jeffrey B. Burton. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Joining me now is author Jeffrey B. Burton. Chat about his book, The Dead Years. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me. It's great to be chatting with another dog lover on animal rights.
Absolutely, absolutely. We always say on this show that if we hear a bark, a cat, a crow, a splash of a fin, then we know we've got a good show coming up. So obviously we love to talk about our animals, but I want to talk to you about this latest book, this novel, The Dead Years, Let Sleeping Serial Killers Lie. I love that, and I love the cover of the book. Tell us a little bit about the book and how it came about and some of the twists and turns.
Sure, yeah. During COVID, my wife and I streamed a lot of true crime documentaries, and I wound up, you know, writing a little note that I tossed in my idea drawer, and my idea drawer is nothing spectacular. It's where I keep my wallet and car keys when I come in the house. And what I put on the note was, what happens if a serial killer is not happy with his portrayal in a true crime Netflix documentary? And I was under contract with St. Martin's Press for another book or two. And so I spent about a year and a half opening the book drawer, and that thing would be peeking up at me. And, you know, when I'd come in, so then I'd say, yes, I'll get to you. And so finally, I think late 2021 and 2022, I wrote The Dead Years. And it has that plot, but it's also got a couple of interesting human remains detection dogs, cadaver dogs, that help kind of move the plot along. The protagonist runs a dog obedience school, but he specializes in training human remains detection dogs.
That's fascinating. So I love that. I'm imagining this in my mind. So here we are in COVID years and the darkest times of our lives. And you just decide, hey, you know, what would it be like to write a serial killer book? The idea thrown in a drawer that constantly sneaks his head out like a serial killer would, you know, on occasion. So,
right. And it was a lot of fun because I think a lot of the true crime things that we had streamed, I was talking with my wife and I'm like, just imagine if some guy it's a cold case and they never caught the guy, and he eventually gets around to streaming it and he's not happy with the actor portraying him or some of the facts of the case. And then some bad things start happening to people that were involved with the production of the documentary.
I love that fact that a documentary comes up about me as the serial killer, and I'm just not happy with it. You know, Tom Hanks playing another one. What's going on here? I can't understand that.
Yeah.
So the flow of the book, how did you go from the concept to actually writing the book and putting it together? How did that flow come about, and how did you find ways to work the angles in? Because one of the characters, obviously, is a police detective on the police department in Chicago.
Right, right.
And the other is a brother.
Dog handler.
You know, two totally opposite things, but their lives do intermingle, or professional lives do intermingle as well.
Right. Yeah, Tim, it's kind of funny because writers always have the debate on whether you're an outliner, where even before you start writing, you've got, you know, whatever, 50, 60 chapters just outlined, and some people even have the research done. And then there's the other side where authors are by the seat of their pants, where they're just kind of, you know, they've got a kernel of an idea and they just start, they sit down, they start writing away. And I had started out an outliner, but my outlines were really loose, because when you're writing a book, something's going to occur to you when you're writing it that's better than anything that you had on your outline. And so I'd wind up finishing writing for the day, then I'd have to tweak the outline per how I changed it. And so for the last couple books, I've been more kind of seat of the pants to see how that goes, where I kind of know where I'm going, maybe a chapter or two ahead. You know, it hasn't really saved me a huge amount of time, because my outlines were so pretty sparse. And in terms of your second question, one of the narrators of the documentary has disappeared, and the Chicago police detective, her younger brother, is the dog handler. And so she calls him in because the guy was a jogger, and he would jog kind of in the morning and at night in kind of a park near his house. It takes place in Chicago. And so that's how, you know, the dog handler shows up. He doesn't really think they're going to find anything, but as they get into kind of the wooded area of the park, he does in fact find something. And so that kind of sucks him into it. There's a few other parts where they need some dogs that come into play. And so I have a lot of fun with that. And it's so amazing, Tim. I mean, when it comes to cadaver dogs, I mean, certain breeds have 300 million scent receptors in their nasal cavity, whereas, you know, you and I, we just have 5 million, and we've kind of evolved with our eyesight. And so, you know, I mean, I go to a movie theater and I got to get popcorn. Yeah, I got to get popcorn. I smell the popcorn. I got to get popcorn. And, you know, you can smell burning leaves and the milk's curdled. You know, you can smell stuff like that. But I tried making a list once, and when I got to the real lower double digits, that was about it. Whereas dogs are, you know, they're supernatural. I mean, they're deciphering thousands of different smells. And that's how, you know, we're able to train them for, you know, explosives or IEDs or all the different kind of narcotics to sniff out heroin or meth or cocaine. They're even able to sniff out certain kinds of cancer. And I read something back during COVID where they were actually trying to train the dogs to maybe sniff out COVID. And so it's just insane. And when I was last at the airport, they had the dog kind of, you had to go through this area and walk by a dog. And the guy that was the handler was explaining to me, I'm like, well, I'm you know, I'm not sneaking drugs onto the plane. He said, you know, this is actually money. They're trying to smell, you know, I don't know if some guy's going to get $500,000 in cash or something. So they're absolutely incredible. Sniffer dogs are absolutely incredible. They're supernatural. And in the dead years, there's Alice, who's the bloodhound. She's 6 years old, and she's real bright. I mean, she's, when it comes to human remains detection dogs, she's about an A+. And then there's Rex, who's a Springer Spaniel, and he's three, and he's not as good as Alice, but he does have his good moments. And so they have a lot of fun, and they wound up helping to save the main characters now and again.
Yeah, I love how the plot intermingled with things. And you brought it up right from the get-go. Is like, okay, I, as an author coming up with an idea, perhaps I'd come up with the idea of, okay, a murder mystery, you know, a little whodunit, add some dogs in there, a little twist, maybe a brother-sister combination. It makes sense. And then all of a sudden you add in what happens if I'm the serial killer and I happen to pop on Netflix and there they are talking about me. It's like, wait a minute, they got it wrong. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he steams. And then a few weeks later, terrible things start happening. You know, the documentary actually serves to, he'd kind of gone dormant. And I won't give away the twist. There's a certain reason he went dormant, but the documentary kind of serves to suck him back out and back in, you know. So
absolutely.
That was fun stuff.
So you mentioned right from the get-go was you were under contract. Now, you know, correct me if I'm wrong in this. You're under contract for your other series, but this was an epiphany you had. And so were you writing the books, what you were contracted to do in this particular book, The Dead Years, at the same time? Or did you have to literally put this, The Dead Years, in a drawer?
Yeah, I had to, literally put it in the drawer for about a year. Yeah, I wouldn't be too good at juggling two projects at once. You know, I'm like, mowing the yard and doing laundry. That can't be done. That's impossible. So yeah, this kind of sat. And then when I was able to come up for air, I was able to kind of dig in and have some fun with this. And the Mace Reed, there's certain parts of the books where I needed completely different characters. But the previous series, the Mace Reed Canine Mystery Series, is also about cadaver dogs. And it's kind of funny, Tim, we're just writing about human remains detection dogs came to me as I actually got jury duty. And not only did I get jury duty, I wound up being assigned to the jury. And I know. And I'm in Minneapolis, St. Paul, but I'm in a county where I've got to drive about 40 minutes to a little town. You know, I don't get to go into Minneapolis. And so my wife's an attorney. My dad was an attorney. Where I met my wife was a place where we dealt with attorneys. So I kept saying when they question you on the juror stand, and I kept saying attorney and counselor. And so I thought based on reading John Grisham novels, I'd nuked myself. And so I was real surprised when they said Jeff Burton. And I'm like, oh, no, I said attorney. So about the first full day that I drove in, I was listening to the news, and there was some poor elderly gentleman who had wandered away from a nursing home or a assisted living facility. And they said, well, you know, the sheriff's going to call out the cadaver dogs. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, I mean, juries, there's so many things. A 5-minute break turns into a 40-minute break. And, you know, a lot of times that the attorneys are trying to figure something out and you're kind of sitting there. And so I started thinking, you know, there have been all sorts of police dogs and there have been bomb sniffing dogs and military dogs, but how about if you could have stories of the trouble that a dog handler and his human remains detection dogs get into and hopefully out of? And so during the trial, you know, they give you a yellow notepad, and this was the most complicated real estate case ever. I mean, I'm filling it out, but on the last page, I'm writing down now what would get this guy involved and what would be the plots and what are the dogs and what are some of the names. And so by the time the trial took an entire week was done, I had the last page kind of filled out. And, you know, the judge came in and he goes, I just want to thank you guys for coming. And the bailiff's going to be in a minute to take your notepads.
Oh,
so
no.
I'm like, you know, suddenly I'm about 13 years old again. I'm trying to really sneaky rip out that last page. I didn't want to tell him. I figured, yeah, you're in contempt of court, you know. So I had to sneak that into my pocket somehow without anyone noticing.
I love that. But something unexpected, you know, oh no, jury duty, I got to go in for that. But all of a sudden, now you got a book, or at least an outline for a book. You have an idea.
Yeah, and it was, you know, kind of interesting to, you know, I mean, I kind of enjoyed it. Was kind of, you do your civic duty, but also, oh, this is how it works. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I have been blessed, knock on wood, multiple times here, but yeah, I think I've gotten called in one time, and by lunchtime, they said, they've settled, or
they sent
something.
Home.
I'm like, oh, somebody home here gave me a coupon for a burger or something. So it worked out all right.
Yeah, burger.
Yeah. That's right. Oh, goodness. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Then we'll continue our conversation with author Jeffrey B. Burton and his book, The Dead Years, Let Sleeping Serial Killers Lie. So everybody hang tight. We'll come back right after this commercial break. You're listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a 4-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Continue our conversation with author Jeffrey B. Burton and his book, The Dead Years, Let Sleeping Serial Killers Lie. So, Jeffrey, you're putting together this book compared to some of the series that you put together. Well, let me ask you, first of all, do you see this book as being a standalone or a series? Or will that depend on the publishing house and what they're willing to do?
Tim, it's the funniest thing is that I've never really gone into something thinking I'm going to do a series. And so for the Mace Reed Canine Mystery Series, St. Martin's Press, I had the first book was called The Finders. And so they read it and they loved it. And they said, hey, would you be interested in getting a, you know, maybe 2-3 book contract and doing it as
said,
a series?
Oh, no, you don't want that.
Yeah, no way. I don't care who you are. I only, you know, so really there's only one answer, and that's yes.
That's it.
And then so The Dead Years I wrote is kind of a standalone. And so I'm with a different publisher now, and they brought the same thing up where, hey, we really like this. Can we sign you to a two book deal? And of course, you just got to say yes.
That's yes, right.
You know,
twist my arm.
So yeah, The Dead Years comes out now, and then I'm frantically working on the book that'll come out a year from now, which is called The Second Grave.
Which
the dogs find.
Love it. Love it. So we'll look forward to having you back on for that one for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be fun.
Well, I know there's authors that, you know, I love talking to authors just about their writing and their writing styles and how they go about doing things. And I, you know, I interviewed quite a few authors that have dual projects in long series. They'll have like their sort of their spring series. And then, in, you know, towards wintertime, there's the totally opposite series. And then there's some they'll put out a spring book and a winter book type thing, Christmas theme type thing. And I always found that fascinating, especially the authors that could juggle the two, you know, where, yes, okay, we've got, you know, cadaver dogs in both series, but they're standalones, and trying to keep the character straight, and how do you keep that flow going? Do you find it, I know you mentioned earlier, you like to work on a project and go from there. Do you find it challenging to try to keep everything separated or bounce from one sort of series to the other?
You know, it's always a little bit terrifying because they, you know, they set up a date where even if it's 9 months away, that we need to have the second book by April. And you're like, hey, you do? All righty. And so I think I don't really have writer's block out of just sheer terror of not having something to give them, you know? And so I am a morning person. And so I'll be here with coffee. And I'll try to kind of rattle things off. And then by, you know, maybe 11 or 12, I'll have to, you know, go and see if there's got to be something on the TV or something else for me to do or eat some junk food.
Turn on Netflix and find another crime book to write.
Yeah, turn on Netflix. But I think the thing that really helps me, Tim, is that I guess I would say that I'm a binge writer where for some reason, if I'm really in the mood, and I just go crazy for like 4 days where it's just like, okay, I know where I'm going for the next 6 or 7 chapters. And I just, you know, everything, the stars align and I'm just right in the zone. And then all of a sudden I've leapfrogged like, you know, 12,000-13,000 words. And so whenever that happens, I'm like, you know, I'll just tell everyone, I'll just, I'm going to be antisocial. Just leave me alone. I need to leapfrog over. And then there's the issue when, you know, I finish and then I go, oh, I don't even know. I'll just send this off. I don't need to even edit it. And then I read through it and I go, oh my God, what was I thinking? I need to edit this pretty intensely, you know.
they say, you know, the pros say, when you get in that zone, don't worry about typos. Don't worry about, you know, editing or anything. Just type it, get it out. And then you can go back and do all that stuff. But I always find that challenging because I being sort of, I don't know if I call myself a perfectionist or not, but as you're going along and you see, you know, something that's out of place or you lose your spot or, you know, there's a massive typos on your screen, I feel compelled to want to make those changes right then and there where I know, according to the experts, that I shouldn't do that.
Well, you know, and I was talking to another author who was telling me that he does speech to text for his rough draft. And I go, I don't think I could do that. I mean, I understand that if you can just spit something down and then just start making editing the primary thing, but I don't think, you know, dictate a book. I think there's almost a thing with the typewriter and typing and everything that it would be impossible for me to just, you know, stonewalked into the bar, you know, and just kind of dictate 80,000 words. But yeah, I guess more power to them.
Yeah, I think it's your own flow on how you do things. I'm like you. I mean, I would love to be able to do that. Just put my headset on or and have my recorder and walk around and I have a whole book, you know, because I can talk. Yeah, as you can tell, I can definitely talk. But the problem is it would jump all over the place. You know, and even when you're doing narration, even if you're doing like audiobooks and doing narration on that, you know, you have to have the script. And for me, I will ad lib. I'll skip around a little bit, but not like I am, you know, doing this radio show or doing, you know, talking to someone where I'm all over the place and all of a sudden a funny joke pops in my mind, or at least something I think is funny, you know, and I want to blend that in the conversation. It's like, no, that doesn't quite work.
You know, and I think also is that when you're typing the first draft, you're probably, you know, you get halfway through a sentence and then you go shake your head and you redo it. Whereas if you're dictating, by the time I'm actually done writing a book, it's really probably second or third draft. Whereas I don't imagine speech to text, that would be pretty hard. Scratch that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I used to do many moons ago in a previous life, I did corporate training and would prep these, you know, training classes and I'd have, you know, the binders, I'd create the binders, all this good stuff, but to put it down into paper, I dictated it and then had my assistant. And it was funny because we got to one point where the assistant I had, she left. And it hadn't replaced her yet. So the only one was available was the president of the company's assistant. And he wasn't a dictator. He basically didn't do a lot of dictation. So I don't know. I think I probably become her least favorite person because I can imagine her putting these headsets on. It's like, what is he talking about now? It has nothing to do with this workshop and training. But with authors, I find that it is all over the place. Some are very morning people. Some are night people. Some are 5,000 words on paper, do or die. Others are deadline driven. Some, like you'd mentioned, all of a sudden you'll get in the zone and you work for 3 or 4 days almost straight. You know, don't bother me, I'm going. And other times you have to sit around. So I don't think there's any right or wrong answer, but I love picking the brains of authors to figure out how their flow is and what has worked well. Because I think you mentioned a little bit earlier about writing in an outline form and then sort of getting away with that, getting moving away from right. that, see if a different method right. would work better for you.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting when I started writing the dog books is that the editor at St. Martin's Press that I wound up working with, she said, Jeff, I don't care what happens to the human beings. No dogs die. And because I'm not too bright, I'm like, well, what about Where the Red Fern Grows go? You know, and what about Sounder and Cujo? And, you know, and then I realized, you know, who I was talking to, and I said, no dogs will die.
That's it. That's
it. May get banged up a little, but they will live.
They always bounce back. They're usually the hero or one of the heroes in the book. And if you put a dog or any animal in a book, you have a great chance of success. And I think that's the key.
Right.
So Jeffrey, when everybody picks up the book, The Dead Years, Let Sleeping Serial Killers Lie, what do you hope they get from that? Is there a goal or accomplishment when they pick up the book and read through it that you hope they get from the from reading through it?
I hope they enjoy it just as a real fun thriller. You know, if you're taking a plane somewhere and you need something to read, or you're going to go lie on a beach somewhere. But then also, I think maybe the love of dogs comes through. I mean, they're a big part of the book, and the dog handlers and just the interactions and how they train the dogs and everything. In fact, I got got Milo here making sure I'm honest.
There you go.
We're right behind me. So, yeah.
Excellent. We must be doing it right because I don't hear any barking. So it thumbs up to or paws up to us. We're okay. Well, everybody pick up a copy of the book. It's The Dead Years, Let Sleeping Serial Killers Lie. It's a thriller. It's a novel. It's got dogs in it. So it's a win-win-win all the way around. It's by author Jeffrey B. Burton. Jeffrey, where can people find out more about you and all the wonderful stuff you got going on?
Oh, yeah. My website, Jeff, which ironically is jeffreybburton.com.
There you go.
jeffreybburton.com. And I've got a, you can kind of surf it, but there's, I've written a lot of different articles and some of them are on different kind of dogs. And I've got all sorts of fun things that you can read that are, if you want to get lost in the world of human remains detection dogs.
Lost in the world. And who knows, you may be the next novel. You never know about these things.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely post that online so everybody knows that and take a look at your website and all the great stuff going on. It's by author Jeffrey B. Burton. The book's called The Dead Years. Congratulations on a job well done. I appreciate the book and the effort and everything. And I definitely appreciate you coming on the show today.
Oh, absolutely, Tim. It's an honor.
My pleasure. Well, we're coming to end the show today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. I want to thank the producers and sponsors for making this show possible. If you have any ideas, comments, or suggestions for the show or any show, drop us a line. You can go to PetLifeRadio.com and we will entertain your comments, answer your questions, and bring on the people you want to hear from most. And so until next time, write a great story about the animals in your life, and who knows, you may be the next guest on Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have a great day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.